Hello and welcome to Pod Catalyst. I'm Peter Finn, Executive Director at IIBC, or the International Association of Business Communicators. And for this episode of Pod Catalyst, I spoke with Fred Cook. You might remember that I spoke with Fred last year with the release of the Global Communication Report. Always a great conversation. A little about Fred. Fred Cook is the Chairman Emeritus at Golin, where he served the company for 35 years. During his tenure, he's worked with a variety of high-profile CEOs, including Jeff Bezos and Steve Jobs. He's also managed a wide variety of clients, including Nintendo, Toyota, and Disney. In 2015, after speaking on college campuses around the world, Fred accepted an additional position with the University of Southern California as the director of the USC Center for Public Relations at USC Annenberg, whose mission is to shape the future of public relations and those who will lead it through research, education, and thought leadership. So, like I said, this is a second year having a conversation with Fred and have him on the podcast to discuss the Global Communication Report. And this is conducted annually by the USC Annenberg Center for Public Relations. The report provides a ton of great insight into the evolution of the global communication industry by analyzing a number of different emerging trends. So this year's theme is New Reputation and incorporates themes from previous reports about social purpose and corporate activism, which Fred and I talked a little about in the episode last year and certainly touched on this discussion. And always a pleasure to speak with Fred, and I think you will enjoy the conversation. So Fred, thanks so much for joining me again to talk about this year's 2023 Global Communications Report. We talked last year about the 2022 report, which was fascinating. I've been able to review the report a bit and have lots of questions for you. But one thing I wanted to kick off with is it seems like there's a conceit or, you know, sort of the metaphor is the Rubik's Cube. Yeah. So could you talk a little bit about that? I know that's featured prominently on the first page of the report.
Well, I'm glad you liked it. That was our sort of, as we got into this topic of reputation, which was sort of a compilation of a lot of the research we've done on activism and purpose and polarization. We kind of combined it all into one survey about corporate reputation, and we compared it to a Rubik's Cube. And we thought that was a good analogy because figuring out the exact thing, message for every audience for a communicator is a very complicated process. And especially today in this polarized world we live in, you turn one side of the Rubik's Cube to get one side of it right, and it affects the other side for a different audience. So what you're saying to one group can screw up what you're trying to say to another group. A good example right now is Bud Light, which has been in the news a lot because on one side of the Rubik's Cube, they were talking to a new audience. And on the other side, what they did offended their existing audience. So we thought the Rubik's Cube was a good analogy for what we have to do to build a reputation.
And, you know, this year's report's focused on reputation, which certainly gets more complex to manage and protect. So just in general, and you mentioned Bud Light, but, you know, how are you seeing the landscape changing now, or how it might be vastly different than it was, you know, just a couple of years ago?
Well, it's really fascinating to watch because there is an increasing demand for companies to speak out by their employees and by their customers. And then there is a growing resistance to that by government officials and people in certain political spectrums or against companies, and they're using the terminology woke to describe them in a negative way. So we have these two conflicting forces that are at work, and communicators are right in the middle of that. And oftentimes the companies don't know what to do or what to say for fear that they're going to upset someone, and often end up upsetting both sides of the Rubik's Cube.
I also think about, and we may have talked about this last year, but like with Disney, you know, and it's sort of, it seems like there's been a sort of growing, you know, with DeSantis, the governor of Florida, versus Bob Iger, the, you know, Disney, like how that is sort of played out. And any thoughts on that, like, you know, how that's, or where that might be going? Is that something that's going to, you know, ultimately head to the courts? Or,
well, the Disney situation is one that I think has gotten a lot of attention and has frightened a lot of CEOs because they see the political narrative that is of attacking Disney. I think that DeSantis has chosen the wrong target in this case. I think Disney has an impeccable reputation. They have a lot of fans and a lot of employees who are very supportive of them. And I think Bob Iger is handling this extremely well. Yeah. So I don't think that their brand's been around a long time. Governor DeSantis was married at Disney World. So I think that that's an interesting head-to-head, but I don't think he's going to gain a lot of political traction from that. But it excites his base, and I think that's what he's trying to do. But long-term, I think Disney will be just fine. But it did scare a lot of other companies, and even the Wall Street Journal wrote an editorial saying companies need to stay out of these societal issues. But I think that is impossible these days. I think that most companies are finding themselves having to have a position on at least a few issues that are important to their constituents.
Yeah, and I think you brought up the word woke, but you know, Disney being sort of characterized as this woke company, and woke mean a lot of different things, but you know, for some it's, you know, it's very pejorative. For others, you know, has a different kind of meaning. But I know that shows up as, you know, something that a focus within the report. So can you talk more about, you know, this in the survey? Because I know there was something in there about consumers are either interested or indifferent if a company is considered woke, which is an interesting data point.
Well, we wanted to find out if woke was a four-letter word.
Yeah.
And when you ask PR people whether they would like their clients or their company to be considered woke, more say no than yes. But when you ask consumers, are they more likely to buy a product from a woke company? 46% said they were. When you ask employees, were they more likely to work for a company that's woke? 38% that said they were. And investors skew very heavily. 79% said they're more likely to invest in a woke company. So despite the fact that the term has been politicized, it still has some equity with people who are conscious of it. And I think that there's also, what does it mean? And I think it means different things to different people. To yeah. People on the left, it means a company that's interested in improving society. To people on the right, it means a company that's trying to dictate their values on their employees and their customers. So it depends on the way you look at the definition, how you feel about the word woke. But it's becoming increasingly polarized and on purpose. It's a very distinct strategy on the side of the right to polarize the word woke and to sort of use that term to defame companies that are progressive in that area.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, I was thinking about just, you know, a communication professional, like this is something that you're confronting, trying to work through in terms of what your messaging is and, you know, how being characterized as a woke company. Like, what insight do you have for, you know, for a communication professional, on, you know, how they kind of handle this? And I guess it sort of gauge, you know, what your company's values are and so on and so forth. But, you know, from the practitioner's perspective, like, you know, what might be some insights for them?
I think that you're exactly right. It's about your corporate values, and you have to have some. And I think the companies that don't have corporate values or don't have a sense of who they are have a hard time managing this process. But companies who know who they are, they know what they stand for, they don't have as much of a challenge finding their way through these political issues. When we launched this report, we had the chief philosopher from Patagonia speak at our event. And they're a company that they know exactly who they are and they know exactly what they stand for. And mainly it's about the environment. And they have no problem figuring out what stance to take on an environmental issue. And they don't really care whether their customers or the general public like their opinion or not. But not everybody can be Patagonia. A lot of people have much broader audiences with different kinds of political and social views in them. So they have to be more subtle in how they approach this. But I think most companies can find issues that are important to them that relate to the values of that company. Chick-fil-A, on the other side, is a company that has very specific beliefs, but everybody knows what they are. And so when they're against something or they're for something, people don't criticize them because they know that's what Chick-fil-A stands for.
Yeah.
So it's important for a company to have that basis and a history of a legacy of dealing with an issue in order to have some credibility when that becomes a problem for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So something else I could just, in reference to the report, so when folks were asked to rank elements of companies' communications, consumer reviews came out on top, representing a paradigm shift for PR pros, where traditionally relying on media and influencer endorsement. So how do you see this affecting comm strategies in the future? Like, which, and I guess also how this translates for, you know, those outside of traditional PR.
Yeah, it's really an interesting point. We're living in what we call the recommendation generation, where we get reviews on everything we do before we do it, whether we go to a movie, whether we choose a professor, when you buy a wine, there's an app or a service that you can find out what other consumers think about it. And we don't make a decision without doing that, whether it's buying a stapler on Amazon or whether it's choosing where to go on vacation. And those consumer reviews are the most important thing in developing a corporate reputation, much more so than influencers, much more so than media. But very few PR programs are directed at getting people to write positive reviews online about a company or a product. But there are millions of people out there. One of my colleagues, Uli Gressel, calls, what does she call them? Committed, I'll think of the name in a minute, but the people that have hundreds and hundreds of Yelp reviews.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They're contributors. She calls them super contributors.
Super users. Yeah.
And they're not influencers, but they're people that are out there. They're reviewing things on Amazon. They work on Wikipedia. They're involved with Yelp, and they're constantly stating their opinion on everything possible. And there's millions of those people doing that. So I think we're living in a world where those have become so important, and PR campaigns need to address that. They need to figure out how to reach those super contributors and also how to convince people to write positive things about them, because that's where the action is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, any brands you can think of that, you know, have been considerably bolstered by the consumer in terms of reviews?
Well, I think it's interesting. I don't know if there's a brand. Amazon is one that comes to mind, but Amazon has created this universe of reviews. So everything they sell is reviewed very meticulously. And I think people put a lot of credence in that. But as a brand, there are probably many brands that are popular because of what other people have said, and not because of the advertising that they do or the marketing they do or the editorial that they get. I can't think of one offhand that stands out. But I think that it's something that very few PR campaigns address. And I think there's a lot of potential there to do that.
And for like a communications professional, or I mean, are you seeing, I guess, maybe groups or, you know, companies or practitioners that have done it, you know, use or leverage the consumer reviews well, or been able to, I mean, any evidence of that, of how you've seen practitioners leverage that?
I think the travel industry is probably the best.
Okay.
Have been doing this for a long time. And so they're probably the most advanced in terms of destinations and hotels and restaurants who thrive on those kinds of consumer reviews. The general business community, consumer products and other things like that have not gotten into it as much. And the B2B businesses, not even as much as they have, because they have a different kind of consumer. But it's happening across the board. So I think we'll see an evolution, and more and more people are going to be paying attention to it.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing. We had a client once who said, we want all of your staff to go on and review our products and give positive reviews on Amazon. And we said, no, we're not going to do that. That's not ethical. So it's not a matter of just getting mass numbers of people to do it.
Yeah.
It's convincing consumers that it's in their interest to do it. And that's where I think it becomes a very powerful tool.
So another topic that is fairly divisive, polarizing, is ESG. And, you know, I know the study showed a gap in consumers and employees' understanding of ESG. But I guess when, you know, briefly described, they see the importance, which could influence certain decisions. You know, what does that look like for communicators and PRs, you know, PR professionals to close that gap? Because I think there's probably been a lot of misinformation about what ESG is. And, you know, I've certainly read some things that, you know, sort of run counter to how I understand it. But what's your take?
Well, it's unclear what's going to happen. I mean, most people think that it's going to be around. Most people think it's going to be mandated. Most people think in our profession think it should be regulated. So I think that probably that's going to happen. There's issues with it. People think that it's too broad because it's not regulated. Companies can say anything they want. And so it allows them to sort of greenwash on environmental issues. And most people don't understand it. But on the positive side, if you're doing things for society or for the environment that are positive, it's a real opportunity. It's a marketing opportunity for companies to tell their story to people who care about this. But right now, only the investment community is the only one that cares about it. They're the only ones that know about it. Very few consumers or employees or even familiar with ESG. So I think it has a big opportunity for us moving forward. But it's not clear. We ask who's responsible for ESG in your organization. And it's not often the PR people are not leading the charge on that. They're involved sometimes in marketing or writing it, but I think it's an area that we should be more aggressive about pursuing. And I think that it's an opportunity for the PR profession. It's an opportunity for companies. But I worry that it's going to become the next woke, that politically, the conservatives who are against companies taking these initiatives are going to try to kill the ESG the same way they are woke.
Yeah. Well, it seems like that's happening. Certainly, you know, with a couple of U.S. states, right? I mean, I thought I saw that, you know, Texas had passed something or, you know, but this kind of, you know, was sort of anti-ESG, but it being a very surface kind of explanation of what it is. And to a certain degree, it seems like it's been kind of used to kind of weaponize. But, so it'd just be interesting to see how that kind of rolls out from like a policy perspective, you know, versus what companies are trying to do and what people have, you know, think is the right direction and a great initiative.
Yeah, we also do a polarization index at USC, and almost every topic is politicized and polarized these days. It's hard to find one that everyone agrees on.
Yeah. You know, just in terms of people that are, you know, going to school for communications and PR, and how valuable do you think it is for, you know, future communicators or folks in early career, mid-career, so on, to be conversant in issues around climate? We think about ESG, but we think about environmental issues. So do you see that as kind of a growing sector for professionals?
When we did the survey and we looked at Gen Z specifically, yeah. And one thing in the survey is we asked companies, the communicators at different companies, what was going to be the most important audience to them in the next 5 years? And they all said Gen Z. So then we asked Gen Z about these different topics, and they're much more aligned with social purpose than older Americans. So they're more interested in the environment and what companies are doing in society than their elders. So I think they're going to be an important generation and they're going to be influential in that regard. And today, I think that the people that are graduating are much more conversant on these issues, whether it's the environment or whether it's about Roe versus Wade or immigration. They're much more knowledgeable than people in the past who went into our profession, because now we have the responsibility to manage all of these issues for our clients and for our companies that we didn't before. And many of them are very complicated. So we have to have that knowledge in order to advise our CEOs and our clients about all these different topics. And it's a lot of responsibility, but it's also really good for our profession because many of these things are just communications issues.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, it's not just a commercial lens. There's like everything kind of has as you're saying, it's like, it's hard to find something where there isn't a difference of opinion, but it's like there's also this political lens that needs to be applied to so many different things.
That was the interesting thing about this study, that we went into it with this Rubik's Cube idea, thinking that everybody wants something different. And it was surprising. We didn't expect it, but it was surprising that there was alignment on reputation across a number of categories with consumers and employees and investors think the same things. We didn't expect to find that. And the PR people that we interviewed for the survey, we asked them to predict how these people would react. And many times they didn't get it right. And that was sort of interesting to see that. We base our thoughts on certain assumptions. We assume that investors are mostly interested in the quarterly financials and the stock price, when in fact, they're more interested in the vision for the future, along with consumers and employees are all interested in the vision for the future. So there's more similarities than we imagine between what these groups want on a broad basis.
Yeah. And I was just curious to kind of, you know, talk about Gen Z for a minute, because I know in that survey, it was nearly half of those surveyed said Gen Z will have the most impact on the company's reputation in the next 5 years. Yeah. So what are some things that current professionals need to know or prepare for the, you know, so there's this next generation who are already, you know, some of which are in the workforce. But what's your perspective on that?
Well, we just did a Gen Z study with Day One, a PR agency, Day One. And it was fascinating. We used a mobile device called D-Scout, and we actually monitored their activity for several weeks, college students, and to see how they get information, how they get news and information and content. And it was a fascinating study. And we learned a few things that I think are really invaluable to brands. One is it's 24/7. There's no prime time anymore. They're sharing and receiving information all the time. They are the recommendation generation. They are getting recommendations from everywhere about every decision that they make. And that's really super important. And they're also getting news from totally different sources than their parents. They don't watch television. They don't read magazines. They don't read newspapers. Yeah. And there's an assumption that they're not very well informed, but they're extremely well informed. But they're their own editors. They're curating this information that comes to them in real time, all the time. And I think that understanding how they absorb content is an important thing for brands to understand. And TikTok is key for them right now. Most of the participants that we studied in this ethnographic study, first thing in the morning is they look at TikTok for half an hour before they get out of bed. And sometimes for entertainment, sometimes for news, but it was a commonality among all of them that they start the day with TikTok.
Yeah, it's funny because we IBC just held its world conference in Toronto, and one of our keynote speakers was she's social media manager at Duolingo, and basically what she's put together is their whole TikTok presence, and it was really, really interesting to hear her walk through that. But it was also equally interesting to see the reactions among folks that are a bit more advanced in their career, but it was really, really interesting to hear.
It's totally, they're informed, but they're informed in a totally different way than we ever were before.
Yeah. And I was just curious too, because I know, you know, you're director at USC and probably working on curriculum. Like, how do you see maybe, you know, I don't know if you call it the canon, but, you know, what's being taught at the graduate school level or undergraduate school level over the next few years?
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to keep up. I tell you, USC does a good job of it, but most universities are not as quick as we are in terms of changing our curriculum, because this profession is so dynamic that by the time you create a course and get it out into the actual curriculum and start teaching it, it can be out of date. And so we work really hard to keep things up to speed for everyone. And we just created a new certificate program for mid-career professionals called PRISM, where they can come back and learn all of these things that we're talking about now, to sort of get as a refresher course. It's like a master's degree online that you can get through Annenberg. So we're trying different ways to make people feel relevant in a profession that's changing so fast.
Yeah, I guess that, you know, the other, you know, sort of hot topic that I've been hearing is, you know, just about, you know, AI and its role and generative artificial intelligence, but, like, you know, its role in, you know, the PR and communications world. And also just like at the graduate and undergraduate level, like, you know, what is a term paper or, you know, some of those things, you know, what does that mean anymore? And I don't know if that's something you know, has been debated.
It's an interesting topic, because in academia, people are worried about AI because they think that students will use it to do their homework, you know, to write papers and essays and that sort of thing. But at Annenberg, we're embracing it and we're trying to teach it and show people how it can be used as a tool in communications, because it's happening, whether we like it or not. And I think for a PR person to understand how to use it, when to use it, and where to use it is really critical. And it has to be done ethically, but it's a powerful tool, and it's going to change the way we communicate as PR people enormously. So we want our students to be ahead of the game. We had an event at our center at Annenberg a couple months ago, and we showcased some new AI tools for PR people that deal with media relations. One's called Profit, that's a media relations tool. And the other is Cometrics, it's about ESG. But it's just the beginning of what we're going to see, the kind of tools we're going to see that are going to impact our profession that are based on AI. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah. Just to jump back to the report, I just was curious, you know, if there's one thing, you know, it's kind of a takeaway, and I think you probably already kind of said some of this, but, you know, for someone to take away from the report, what would it be?
Well,
because there's a ton of data in there. I mean, I was like, this thing is dense. It is excellent. But I don't know if there's, you know, what your headline would be for folks.
Well, I think the headline for most people, for me, was that there's more similarity between different audiences in terms of what they want from a corporation than we anticipated. So the Rubik's Cube isn't quite as hard to figure out as we thought. And you can really study this report. You can get it online from us, or if you want, you can send me an email, send you a hard copy. But it is a lot of interesting information about the nuances between these different groups. But there's a lot more similarity between what they're looking for from a company than we imagined. And I think if you hit those notes, you talk about the future, and you're culturally, you talk about your ethics and your transparency. And then you talk about your social purpose, what you're actually doing versus what you're saying. That's really critical as well. So there are some key learnings in here that I think would help a communicator at almost any company figure out what they should be saying and doing in a time where it's very complex and a little bit tricky.
Do you have a sense of how many people might use your report with their senior leadership? I mean, is that, do you ever get feedback, you know, like, this is something that, you know, kind of shared, you know, with a communication or PR executive sharing with the folks in the C-suite?
I wish I knew, and I wish more were. We distribute it as widely as we can, both online and in real time. And it's this one in particular has got a lot of real practical information that you can use. And I hope that this, you know, this podcast is one of the things that we're doing to promote it. And I hope that people will respond and take a look at it, because it's really worthwhile. And we're going to keep doing this as long as we can to try to provide people with a glimpse of the future of this profession, because we love PR at USC. And we're always trying to gaze into the future to see what's going to happen next. And it's always interesting.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me on this program. And thanks to IABC for all your support.
Yeah, absolutely. We always want to participate for as long as you're doing the report, because when I received a copy of the report, I posted it for some of our volunteer leadership and the board. And so it's, you know, it's something I get a lot out of every year, and I know our members do. So I think I asked you the last podcast, but I mean, we ask everybody, like, what still gets you up in the morning? I think I asked you what got you up in the morning last time, but what gets you up in the morning?
Well, I used to be a runner, so I would run all the time, every day, but now my knee is messed up, so I don't do that anymore. So usually when I get out of bed, there's a trainer that comes to our house a couple of days a week, and he works me over instead of running. I get to do exercise, but that's usually what does it. But I love teaching, and I've been at USC now for, I don't know, this would be my eighth year, believe it or not, and it's fun all of the time. We have the great faculty, great students, and I can't wait till school starts.
Yeah, excellent. Well,
thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. I really appreciate it once again, and I'm looking forward to next year's report.
Thanks so much to Fred. Another great conversation. Really appreciate his insight and taking some time to talk about this year's Global Communication Report. Again, the theme is new reputation. IBC will post the report and make sure that our membership and just kind of the broader community knows about the report. A lot of great information for practitioners. And thanks again to Fred for being so generous with this time.